Blog Talk Radio.
On the Edge, real talk about real issues.
Welcome, welcome, welcome everybody to the On the Edge Show with Katie Burnett. I'm your host, Katie Burnett. I'm your host, Katie Burnett. And we're going to thank God for another day of being here, another opportunity to gather together with my listeners and to talk about our community problems. A little later on in the broadcast, we're going to have our famous Monster Miles with his wonderful sports segment. But until then, let's do our sponsor shout-outs to our affiliates, starting off with the amazing Barry Maestro Mason, formerly of 98.7 KISS FM radio in New York. Now he is the Sunday DJ from 6 to 10 p.m. on isolradio.com, and he is the masterful CEO of Track One Entertainment Company. Those of you that have had the blessing of being able to attend one of his events, you all know that you have nothing but a good time, and he treats you very well. So, Barry, thanks for being a part of the team, and thanks for having us. Also, to my two divas out there, Miss Stephanie Hammond-Tillett and Miss Marcia Morgan of that sensational company, Simply Sensational Inc. Entertainment, they also, in cahoots with Barry Mason, come up with some fantastic events. Those of you that have been around and have had the wonderful privilege of being in one of the events, you know that you come out with nothing but a good time, and nothing that you pay for, you don't get. So thank you, Stephanie. Thank you, Marcia. Thank you, Barry. I want to shout out to my team real quick. Monster Miles of the Sports, Jody Jojo Brown of our upcoming relationship segment, our co-host, Lady Diamond, and, of course, the amazing Dome Wrecker. As you know, he always graces you every Monday and Thursday with an absolute wonderful, wonderful musical mix of classics and new R&B house, everything that you want. Okay, so tonight's topic is part two of the legal system's very fine line. We all know that it's been inspired by this topic. Yesterday's portion was regarding how the defense team pretty much was, I call it, bending the rules of what's supposed to be an absolute judicial law system. Okay, so my question to the guest yesterday was, do you believe that if a defendant has enough money, has enough connections, is has good status or of a certain, let's say, profile, that as much as our American judicial set of laws and statutes are written in absolution, that money or power can enable a certain amount of people to tweak the wording just a little bit to make it work for that defendant's bad actions. And yesterday, we had quite a bit of some colorful insight where people sort of believe that that is true. We brought up, for example, Mayor Bloomberg in New York City. He held a mayoral position for two terms, as is per written in the American Constitution. But somehow, some way, he found the tiniest little loophole, and of course he's a billionaire, so he used his money to buy himself a third term. Now, mind you, this is against everything that, like I said, is written in absolution with the American laws, but yet and still, this billionaire mayor found a way to get himself into a position that clearly, as a little kid, having too much money to spend, you know, was one of the toys he wanted to play with and play king for another year, 4 years. So, with that being said, that was one of the examples that we used to talk about how our legal system has a very fine line. Today, we were graced with the wonderful, powerful closing argument of the prosecution against George Zimmerman, which, in many people's opinion, we believe that the prosecution actually prosecuted the case more powerfully in its closing than it did during the actual direct examination. But for whatever the reasons are, I thank God and I thank, you know, whatever powers that be, that they managed to come together and bring out some very key points for the jury to consider on their deliberations. Now, when I come back from our early commercial break, I am going to point out some of the observations that I brought up that I thought were very strong points and a couple of small things that I felt could have been added into their pot and could have, you know, definitely made more of a cemented security for, you know, the power in their closing argument. So tonight, in honor of this whole situation, in honor of all the frustrations that we, as I guess, as African Americans have had, seeing some of the blatant injustice that's been happening in this trial, I want to once again appeal to my team that's out there, that's listening, not to incite any riots, regardless of which way this verdict swings, because we want to show these people that is filled with ignorance and hatred for differences and fears that they have, which are not necessary to have, that we are a smart people that know how to go out there and use our voices and our intellect to make a difference and not our fists and not batons as the ignorant people do. All right, so with that being said, I want to pull out a classic that only a few of us in our certain tender ages would remember, but this was a movement, a video song that was made, created by KRS-One back in the 90s and the 80s, and it was called Stop the Violence. And we want to let the youth of today hear that song, and when we come back from the break in 6 minutes, we're going to get this tonight's topic started, okay? So bear with me as we listen to Stop the Violence.
We all agree tonight, all of the speakers have agreed, that America has a very serious problem. Not only does America have a very serious problem, but our people have a very serious problem. America's problem is...
It's one of two suckers, ignorant brothers, trying to rob and steal from one another. You get caught in the mid. So to crush that stereotype, here's what we did. We got ourselves together so that you could unite and fight for what's right. Not negative cause. The way we live is positive. We don't kill our relatives.
Pop, 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 what a shot, who's to blame? Headline, front page, and rap, the name. MC's the right here to state the bottom line. The black on black crime was way before our time.
Sugar brother, life, what a knife, that's cause he died of trifling death when he left his very last breath. Was I blessed to watch his step? Back in the 60s, our brothers and sisters were hanged. How could you gangbang? I never ran from the Ku Klux Klan, and I shouldn't have to run from a black man. Cause that...
Stop this, 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 st educated, evaluated. Thoughts of the past have faded. The only thing left is the memories of our belated. And I hate it when someone dies to get all hurt up for a silly gold chain. My chump,
word up.
It doesn't make you a big man. And to one and go and dish your brother, man. And you don't know that's part of the plan. Why? Because rap music is in full demand. Understand?
It's no fun. The time is now to unite everyone. You don't have to be soft to be for peace. Robbing and killing and murdering is the least. You don't have to be chained by the beast. But party people, it's time I release.
Hey yo, here's the situation. Idiocy, nonsense, violence. Not a good policy, therefore we must ignore. Fighting, busting. Heaven's at the door, so there'll be no bum rushing. Let's get together before we're falling apart. I heard a brother shot another. It broke my heart. I don't understand the difficulties, people. Love your brother, treat him as an equal. They call us animals, I don't agree with them. I'll prove them wrong, but right is what you're proving them. Say cheese before I leave you what I'm saying. Or we'll all be on our knees, pray.
Heavy beat, deep in the heart of the matter. The self-destruction is served on a platter. Making a day, not failing to anticipate. They got greedy, so they fell for the bait. That makes them a victim, picked and plucked. New jacket jails, but it's the best they ever duck. There's no one around, cause in jail you're a number. They never took the time to wonder about
self-destruction.
Yes, we urge to merge. We live for the love of our people to hope they get along. Getting a point to our brothers and sisters who don't know the time.
Boy, so we run around.
Instead in your head, you know our job to build and collect ourselves with intellect. To revolve, to evolve to self-respect.
Cause we got to keep ourselves in check. Or else it's
now, back with more On The Edge.
Welcome back, everybody, to the On The Edge show with Katie Barnett and friends. I'm your host, Katie Barnett. For those of you that's just joining us, that was called Self-Destruction by a group of famous talented rappers and music artists and singers called the Stop The Violence Movement. It was back in the 90s, possibly late 80s. And that would be around my era, so I'm not giving away my age, don't anybody ask me. All right, moving along to tonight's topic. Tonight's topic is part two of yesterday's discussion, the legal system's very fine line. Now, yesterday was inspired by the way the defense attorneys in the George Zimmerman trial was trying to pretty much demand of the judge by tweaking an absolute law into omitting certain things that allows the jury to view for deliberations. They were tweaking laws that meant exactly one thing as it was written, yet they tried to put a little, I don't know, colloquial or poetic spin on things, word it just slightly differently, so that it could make George Zimmerman appear like the flower power child and not the man that followed a kid and was determined to get rid of, as he put them, one of these effing a-holes. Okay, so yesterday when I asked our panelists that called in, what do they feel about the security of the law's absolution? Do they believe that it can be for sale, in a sense of the word, or negotiable, depending upon the person who's on trial status, their financial status, their connections, their power, or who they represent in the community? And quite surprisingly, and then not so much, most people agree that based on some of the examples and some of the tactics used in this defense system, indeed, we might be in fear of even the law can be bought at any point in time. Okay, so getting back to tonight's situation, today I would like to point out a few of the things that took place with this absolutely wonderful and powerful closing argument that the prosecution brought up, which I believe they did a better job of actually prosecuting the case in their closing argument. Now, our first panelist is in for the evening, and I'm going to bring her in. and we're going to start this discussion on our way. So let's go with it. Welcome, caller. You're on the air.
Hello. Hi, Katie. How are you?
Oh, hi, Lady Diamond. Okay, listeners, this is our co-host, Lady Diamond. She's calling in to join in this discussion. And you guys all out there that's calling in, feel free. When you call in, just press 1 if you want to make a comment or join the discussion, and we will bring you in, okay? All right. Elaine, did you get to see the trial today?
Oh, sorry, repeat that?
Hello?
Yes.
Did you get to see the trial today? Did you get to see the trial today, or did you get any feedback on it from other people who did?
No, I got some feedback from, my family members. One of my brothers, who senior photography, he known for that, so he gave me his point of view on it, and we all agreed on it that if it goes the way we think it will, he most likely will get 20 to life. That's if it goes by what we think it will. Minimum maybe 15 to life. That's what I was telling him. And we were like going back and forth on it, and he, he feels that, he has a great defense team. We already know that already. A great defense team. A lot of money that was put into that defense team, especially the other team that they are as strong too, but the defense is a lot stronger than they are.
I don't think so, because as much as the defense was pulling no punches during the actual direct examination, their closing argument today was putting people to sleep practically. And one thing I will say to point out some things is that for once in this trial, ever since Rachel Gentile was battered to death on that witness stand, they actually got to tie up almost every lie and every point of, perceived guilt or, suggested guilt that the evidence has to this point already been showing. And I took a few notes, and one of the things I think was really powerful was as George Zimmerman kept telling his story to different people, one of the things that the prosecutor brought up in the closing argument to the jury was this. He actually started adding details with each and every recollection or account of the story. And there was a 2-minute gap between the time that he said, have the officer call me when they get here, and to the point where he actually reconnected with Trayvon. That was one. So, excuse me here. So that was one. Now, one of the details that he had added on was that during this huge, in the rain, on the wet grass, in the mud, cement/lawn fixture area where they were fighting at, that Trayvon was covering his nose and his mouth. So what he added was, if that was true, okay, why was there no blood on Trayvon's hand, since everybody's been showing these big broken nose and bleeding and, profusely bleeding.
They didn't have a fracture on him, just a couple of bruises.
Right. Well, no. When the defense was bringing out the point of trying to prove just how George Zimmerman could really be in fear of his life, they tried to show all this bloody, big mess that this man had, when even all of the medical experts for the defense and the witness and the prosecution was pretty much saying that the blood was coming more than the actual damage was because of where the cuts were placed. And not only that, today they actually brought up the actual official size of each of these lacerations, which, by the way, people, means a cut. One was 0.5 centimeters, and the other one, I believe, was 2 centimeters. All right? Any woman who's had a baby knows that 2 centimeters is nothing. Okay, you can actually measure it and can't even fit your eyeball into the space between your 2 fingers when you're trying to compare it. So the thing that he brought up was, if all this blood was flowing at the time that Trayvon was covering his nose and mouth during this very vicious struggle, by the way, I'm going to say again, in the mud, in the rain, on the grass, and the cement, why was there no blood under Trayvon's nails, on his knuckles? Why didn't his fingers and fists look a lot more swollen to be consistent with George Zimmerman's account of being pounded repeatedly? But I felt we should have added with that as well, that since everybody kept trying to say the voice was Trayvon's or the voice was George Zimmerman's, one of the things that the first prosecutor brought out in the beginning was, if there was a nose and mouth being covered, how come the call for help on the 911 recording was consistently clear and loud? Okay? There was no time and point where any part of the help was muffled, like someone was having their mouth covered. I believe he should have asked, the second prosecutor should have added into that question, how could, if he was having his nose and mouth covered repeatedly, could the calls for help have been his? That was my question. That was one of the things. He did bring up the 2 minute lapse. Also, I'm confused, and this is just me because I didn't really get to watch the trial from the very, very first day. So if anyone that's out there that has been covering this trial from day one, please call in and clarify this for me. If Trayvon's body was only turned face up, when the police there to investigate and determine if he was really dead or not, then how is it that George Zimmerman's defense people are saying that there was a close point of contact from the front to his chest? And how exactly did his heart have a bullet in it, unless he shot him from the back with the body being face down that way? Now, like I said, I'm not saying anything.
Yeah, you shot from the back, you were falling face first.
Okay, say that again? Yeah, well, I'm saying that they kept making a point of the fact that Trayvon's body was face down and only moved when the proper authorities arrived. And so then it became that, oh, his hands were spread eagles, but yet now they're making a big point of the fact that, first of all, his body was face down and his hands were beneath his body. And then they brought up, which was good, how could Trayvon have reached for the gun if he was being straddled on, or even if he was straddling George Zimmerman, his legs and his knees, everything from the waist down where the gun was. So he couldn't possibly be holding George Zimmerman down and grabbing for his gun. Then the story changed from George Zimmerman's own mouth that he was reaching down the side, so I thought he was going to go for my firearm. And then, as the first prosecutor pointed out, then Trayvon must have been an octopus to be able to hold him down, punch him a million times, grab his gun, and try to shoot him. So all of these things were actually brought up and tied up today. Okay? Another point that I brought up was, that I noticed was, poor Tracy Martin, the boy's father. For the first time they showed him up close, I actually saw him literally trying to breathe and hold his tears back. And that affected me. You know, the mom, I think, has donned an immunity look where she's heard it so much that I think now she's almost numb from the pain, so she's not showing too much of an expression. But the father actually was visibly shaken today. Okay? So we're going to go once again back to not so much today about whether or not the absolution of our Lord can be mended and bent pertaining to whoever the defendant is, but now I want to speak about what do we believe was effective. Was the powerful delivery and the closing arguments to be effective enough for these juries, the jurors, to see exactly what was being said all along? Were all the consistent lies that this guy cleverly tied up together, you know, make these people go with what the obvious is? Or will somebody try to squeeze out some way, some loophole, to make them sway the way most of us believe or are afraid they're going to go? Now, based on what you know, what do you feel?
It's a lot of static. All right, I think I cleared up a little bit. So I was hearing a lot of static. Okay, repeat yourself now, please. There was a lot of static on your side. Repeat yourself one question. I heard most of it, but not all of it.
I said, today I want to ask the question. accidents on based on what everybody saw or heard of the powerful delivery of the closing arguments from the prosecution today. The way
right.
he very, very skillfully tied up the lies and he made a progressive action. The way he pointed out all of the inconsistencies that the defendant himself said in all of his recounting, do you feel that this will be enough to convince the jury to go with the only verdict that the evidence is pointing to? Or do you feel that somebody or somehow, some way, they're going to tweak it to try to give George the
answer? Yeah, I understand now. I understand the question now. Because I heard parts of it, now I hear the whole thing. The prosecution, that's ending. If that ending argument is the strongest thing that they could ever give them, and I hope it was strong enough for them to actually to make the jury believe what the whole case was about, you know, I just hope that that closing argument that they made is, you know, legit enough for these people to say, okay, this man has to be behind bars. He, you know, we have to make an example of this man for what he did. You know, if they made like a, you know, a very solid, you know, closing case on them, then you know this whole case will go, you know, it's gonna go one way, and we all know where it's gonna go. You know, it's gonna go one way. But if the defense made it a stronger argument, me, I think that they're gonna lean towards more towards the prosecutor's side. These people are gonna lean towards the prosecutor's side. You know, it was a trial. And these jurors are women? All these jurors are women, am I correct?
Yes, all of them are.
All these jurors are women. So they also have to put themselves in the shoes of that mother and see their own child get killed. And then to see themselves saying, wait a minute, if that was my son, you know, how would I feel about this? If I was sitting in that woman's shoes, how would I feel about this? So most likely, like I said, if the prosecutor made a good closing statement to end it and, you know, to finish it off, they will lean towards the prosecutor's side and they will make a good verdict for, you know, for George Zimmerman, you know, because we all know what he deserves. You know, and depending on that state, I don't know if they do the, you know, the death penalty there, but depending on that state, he may end up going for 15 to life.
Well, I will tell you, funny you should mention that, did you ever see the movie A Time to Kill?
Oh my gosh, I will never forget that movie.
Well, if you remember the summation that...
This was Morgan Freeman, am I correct?
No, Matthew McConaughey and Sam Jackson.
Matthew McConaughey and Charlie Theron, yeah. No, and Sandra Bullock.
Well, if you remember the summation that had the jury, you know, come back with the not guilty verdict, today... I almost felt like I was watching that movie again because the way that this man came out, he actually told the jury, let's forget what you see here and let's reverse the situation. Imagine that it was 28-year-old Zimmerman that was walking the street in the rain, putting with a hoodie, trying to protect himself from the rain. And imagine that it was Trayvon that followed him. Would we be sitting here today with the same outcome, with the same, you know, questions? So I found that to be wonderful, and I found what he said, as much as it might sound like, you know, let me grab them while it's hot, or let me give this good publicity stunt. The one thing that he said that is so absolutely true is that the last thing that this boy tried to do was to get home. The last thing that this 17-year-old boy tried to do in his life was go home.
Yep.
And today, the judge read off the rules and regulations of deliberation for the jurors. And funny that she did, with all the big blocks of text that she was reading off to explain to the jury what they were allowed to base their deliberations on, or how they should come to a conclusion. Or no, not how. What would they be allowed to use to come to a lawful conclusion? All of it was the same. A person is allowed to take a human life if they had to do it, if it was done accidentally, okay, in a way where they couldn't prevent it in a sudden combat. And if they did it in a way with careful considerations or reasonable considerations for preservation of human life, but if it couldn't be avoided, and if they didn't use weapons in a way that would inflict immediate and deadly harm by intent. But then at the same token, she says, in order for you to come back with a second-degree guilty verdict or any of the lesser charges, you don't have to prove that he intended to inflict harm. However, the prosecution did.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it wasn't mandatory, the jurors can go back with saying that even though we don't have to, we do have it right in front of us. This man pointed out that we could even allude to that. And she brought that up. Now, most of these things was by reasonable force or with reasonable intention. Mostly the self-defense was strictly plain as day. If this person was coming at him where he was and he could not offset immediate or perceived danger without using equal force or deadly force coming at him or where he lives or is dwelling. All right? George Zimmerman left his rightful place to have a self-defense claim when he left the safety of his apartment or his house as he was calling the police. He left out there. Not only did he leave, but he pursued and pursued and pursued and pursued until he got what he was looking for.
That's right.
And if he, just as the prosecutor pointed out, if he was so in fear of his life, why would he reholster his gun if he finally had something that would offset the aggression of the person that he claims was coming at him?
If he was so much fear of his life, why would he leave his home?
Thank you. Why would you get in your car? And then he even said
and follow the person.
Circling his car. But you still got out? And on top of that, the prosecution pointed out from where George Zimmerman himself said that Trayvon was, there was no possibly physical way he could have been there and came all the way over to circle his car in the amount of time that George Zimmerman claimed it took place. Okay? And that was very, very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And throughout all of this, the other thing that kept on coming up to my attention or kept tweaking my interest was the judge kept on explaining that the three acceptable conditions of taking a human life, one of the things she kept saying was justifiable use of deadly force comes when it can't be avoided by sudden combat or provocation. It's not done in a cruel or inhumane manner, okay? It can't be avoided, and if it just so happens that something, in the heat of the moment, something took place and then a movement caused the death, that is not the case in here.
Yeah, there is no heat of the moment. That makes no sense. There is no heat of the moment. It's like, the MIS got into a huge fight, and the heat of the moment, I punched his nose out. That's the heat of the moment. Because it's him following a child, that's no heat of the moment. That makes no sense.
Or if you've been sitting in class trying to avoid getting into a confrontation with a bully, and finally this person is consistently tapping you in the back of the head or consistently saying things regardless of you ignoring them, and your anger is building up and you're frustrated, and you just react. That is heat of passion. This man had passion built in him for months on end. Every month on the point he was calling about some suspicious character that always happened to be black. And guess what? That ace in the hole, my best friend is black, last-minute rebuttal witness that they called up there, George Zimmerman, based on her own account, trying to make him look like a good guy, a non-racist guy, told her some things that still helped the prosecution prove their case. An interesting thing came up today, Mr. Geraldo Stupid Rivera, and I'm going to say that on the air, you idiot. Okay?
Yeah.
Geraldo Rivera, who, for some reason, ladies and gentlemen, I thought this
was
gone after his broken nose and his failed shows. But, clearly he's being biased toward George Zimmerman, for George Zimmerman. So, okay, he tried to put out so many controversial things. Well, I really believe that their prosecution is proving the defense's case. No, he's not. There's no way that anybody, and one of the other things that the judge brought out, funny that I that this man should say that, is that in deliberations, in considering your deliberations, considering the evidence, try to picture it as with what's presented in front of you. What would a common, reasonably minded, sane person with logical common sense, how would they react in that situation? Would they feel the need to use the methods that took place? Did you feel that George Zimmerman indeed did kill Trayvon by a gunshot? According to her, they had to prove two things, that Trayvon Martin is indeed dead, which that's already been solidified, and they have to find that George Zimmerman used the gun to kill him, and that George Zimmerman's firearm was what killed him, which it did. Then they said you don't have to prove intent. So if that's all they need, then guess what? His conviction is in the bag. But then now, that's where human common sense comes in. Because if it was just that black and white, then people who were in the heat of the moment wouldn't be able to get off on, you know, an acquittal or lesser charges. They would go exactly what happened. The jury was going to go, oh, no, there was a fight. He punched him. It's out. That's it. It's over. But that's not the case here. You have to start looking at the fine lines. There are none with George Zimmerman. There are none. No matter how many fabricated pieces of evidence, no matter how they try to exaggerate the 2-centimeter cuts, no matter how much blood that could easily be wiped away with a gauze pad and some water came up, how do you explain that this man testified repeatedly on video reenactments, on statements recorded? How does he explain that he himself said Trayvon repeatedly bashed his head into wet cement, but they also tussled on wet grass because now it was pouring down raining, and this man was in a fairly light-colored two-piece suit that had not 1 ounce of grass stain, not a mud stain, not a blood stain, not a dust stain. And the only evidence of him being in wet anything was his own shoes, right in the area that's consistent with him having been the person on top. And the top of his shoes being on the ground, on the wet ground. Mm-hmm. How come he wasn't nauseous or have blurred vision or have blurred speech from being repeatedly bashed into a hard concrete surface? How was he able to consistently and coherently and comprehensively tell his story 15 different times to 15 different people with 15 different versions and some new added-ons? How was he able to do that, having been bashed consistently in the head and pummeled in the face and MMA style and all this other stuff? And how is it that Trayvon wound up precisely shot with precision and expert marksmanship directly in the chest? And how is it that if he was the one screaming on that tape, that as soon as the gunshot went off, so did the screaming? Things that make you go, In this particular instance, I believe that if this was the case being prosecuted from day one, this closing argument was actually the powerful prosecution of the case. And in turn, the defense was nonstop hooking, jabbing, kicking, stomping, and their defense argument, the closing argument, was weak and drone-like. I believe that everything they tried to sway the judge to take out that would help their client's case, okay, that she refused to take out, sort of took the wind power out of them of trying to plot anything new. But I will tell you this, ladies and gentlemen, it is crunch time. It is crunch time. Those women that have been away from their family since April, that wasn't allowed to connect with the outside world, that was stuck into their boxes, that have to listen to the fact that a mother and father lost their 17-year-old boy who was only 17 by 21 days. Who all he did, by all accounts and means, regardless of what he called George Zimmerman while he was in fear of his life, all he did was buy Skittles and an Arizona. not the state, ladies and gentlemen. He bought a can of Arizona beverage. Watermelon flavored.
Mm-hmm.
And still, the fruity kind. So unless there's some nuclear bomb that could happen if you hit a small plastic package over someone's head that hard, I don't see where the danger was. Everything that is consistent with this man brutally murdering this boy, leading up to the fact that he was going to get him a person tonight. He was going to kill an asshole tonight. Excuse the French on the air. Everything about the evidence that was presented to this jury from day one, regardless of the dismissively disregarding of human life defense team that he has, was progressively indicating that this man intended to kill one of them again. And just like they said today, this wasn't about stand your ground. And you know what? Let's even take the race card out of it.
Yeah.
This is about a man that had hatred for something. And that poor boy represented that something. And that
night, he just
happened to be the nail in the coffin for all those people that got away.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, you're right. Let's take the race card out. Let's just look at him as a child, just a child. He doesn't have to be black, doesn't have to be Hispanic, doesn't even have to be white or any other, you know, race, you know? Just a child. That's all we have to look at. He was a child, you know? Once we take the race out, he's still a child. He was a living, breathing little boy. He was a little boy, still a baby, still trying to live his life. He was a child, and that's the only thing that everybody has to look at it as. Forget about the race cars, forget about everything. He was a child that had a life, and it was taken away from him by that man, and that is not fair. That is not fair at all.
Indeed it's not. Indeed it's not. I'm going to go take a little bit of a break, okay? Von Martin to Sabrina and to Tracy Martin, I would like to play this so that as much as there's a tragedy in this, this song is to let you know that although he got taken in a quick and very bad manner, he's in a better place with the Lord right now. And, you know, hopefully this helps you, you know, have some comfort, because we all are out there praying for justice and some peace with this, at least for you to be able to see some justice done for your baby. It's called Good to Be Home, and it's by Coco Jones. And I hope to God that every single one of you out there can learn a lesson from this. You know, if you have any type of biases based on fear, and ignorance is not necessarily a bad thing. Ignorance could just mean you're not aware. Okay? Try to get to know what you or face the fears that you have, because it may not be as nightmarish as you think. Once you get into the other side. Here's Coco Jones with So Good to Be Home. I'll be back in 3.5.
Mercy, love, and grace. And though it's been a long time,
You're listening to On the Edge.
Welcome back, everybody, to the On the Edge show with Katie Barnett and friends. I'm your host, Katie Barnett. That was Coco Jones, So Good to Be Home, from the movie Let It Shine. And that was in a dedication to Trayvon Martin and his family, which I can't imagine the insufferable pain they must be going through right now. But the hope that they're possibly holding on to that powerful closing argument delivery that was taking place today will, you know, finally put the evidence back on the under the light it should have been seen under. We were speaking in with Lady Diamond. Those of you that are just joining us, we are covering the question of, with the spinoff from yesterday's beginning part one of this topic, today's closing arguments from both sides. Now, we all have come to agreement, those of us that were graced enough to actually be present to see it. The prosecution actually prosecuted the case more strongly in the closing argument than they actually did during the trial itself. They were able to restore the credibility of Rachel Gentile. They were able to tie up and progressively connect George Zimmerman's intentions, even though, according to the judge, juries don't have to prove intent to come up with a guilty verdict for either of the charges. But with that being said, they had the bonus of having that proven from the powerful delivery of John Guy today. So that's one. The other thing that came up today was the explanation of what reasonable doubt is, of what the three conditions of taking a human life are that are acceptable by law. And no matter which charge she was reading to, those three conditions applied, and most of what she says on a whole is, you got to have had some basic reasonable care to try not to take a person's life or inflict harm. But if it so happens in the heat of the moment during a sudden conflict or sudden provocation, and you tried your best not to just pound on a person, but something that you did made that happen, it was accidental and not intentional, okay, or unavoidable, that if you didn't have any firearms or any weapons, okay, that you deliberately used in a manner to cause bodily harm or death. Another thing that they spoke about was that reasonable doubt cannot be anything that's imagined, implied, or a possible doubt. So it has to be a reasonable doubt in order for you not to consider that piece of evidence. Okay, or if there's a slight doubt, that evidence didn't tie up to the main accusation or the main charge. So these things, I believe, did not apply to George Zimmerman at all by his own accounts and testimonies outside of the courtroom, because he refused to testify on his own behalf, of course, even though that legally can't be considered a strike against him. But with all that being said, as I posed the question earlier, do you feel that with the powerful delivery and the tie-ups and, I believe, the big damage control that was done, will these jurors, you know, get back on track and away from all the, what I call the filler testimony and the three-ring circus distractions? Do you believe that they will be focused enough now to focus back on exactly what has been happening, what the evidence has been saying, truly saying, from day one? And will they come back with a justifiable verdict? So I'm going to bring Lady Diamond, our co-host, back on, and then we have a panelist that wants to join in the discussion. Hi, Lady Diamond, are you back?
Yes, I'm back. I'm sorry about that.
Okay. Yeah, we have another panelist. Let me bring them in. Welcome to the On the Edge show. Call you on the air.
Good evening. Good evening. How's everybody? Hello, panel. How's everybody doing? God bless.
God bless you, Deacon. How are
Hello,
you?
Hello, Deacon. How are you?
All right. Sorry, all right, I'm late.
Okay. Well, we're going to put the question over to you because Elaine and I have had some ample time to discuss. So did you get to watch the trial at all today?
Yes, and I'd like to commend the prosecutors a little bit because they seem to be on top of it. I like the direction they were going with their final submission. So I feel good about it. I don't think he's going to get out of there anything less than a murder charge. I don't even see it going being a manslaughter charge because there's no way it should be.
And if it does,
there's something wrong with the justice system there in the state of Florida.
I mean, listen, it was clear as day that this man made every piece of evidence that everybody already saw coming be plausible and, matter of fact, be almost impenetrable to prove differently.
Right.
I think all the teasing circus and the trapeze artist, flip-flop circus acts that the defense has done, I don't think it matters in the end. I don't think it matters in the end. And then what gets me is that after all that desperate attempt and all that aggressive, even going after the judge type thing, their defense was boring. Their closing arguments was really not powerful at all. Not even the tone of voice was effective. So I don't know if it's that they got complacent and felt we don't have to do all that in the end because we'd already done did what we had to do. But I doubt it. I think that maybe after all the tricks they've tried and that judge stood around, I think that maybe they just got tired of trying to pull a last-minute rabbit out of that. Because one thing that I was very impressed with today was they even attacked the prosecution, even broke down the credibility of that so-called last-minute witness that tried to prove George Zimmerman a non-racist. The lady that justified from her sickbed.
Yeah.
Even by her own account of something that George Zimmerman told her, they used against it to prove their point.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the only one thing that I felt that John Guy could have added on to really, really solidify one major point that he brought up, which I don't think you were on to hear me say, but I said it to you, Elaine, was this. He brought up something that so did the previous prosecutor on day one of closing arguments, but he brought this point up, and it said, Drayvon, supposedly by George Zimmerman's account, was covering George Zimmerman's mouth and nose quite a bit throughout the screening, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the first prosecutor pointed out that if that was so, how come on the 911 recordings of the screams for help, there was not one muffled interference? Where, if you're going, help, help, oh, oh, it was nothing like that. So that was number one. I felt that when this second prosecutor continuing the closing argument brought that point up again, why didn't he add in that if that was the case, then that kind of would disprove that George Zimmerman could possibly have been the screamer, because not once was there an interruption in the clarity of the sound of those screams. And number two, as soon as the gunshot went off, so did the screaming. So those points I felt should have been brought into that, the possibility of even eliminating George Zimmerman as a possibility of being a screamer.
Yeah.
You know, which discredit his whole thing. They did point out the two-minute lapse between the time that George Zimmerman was last speaking to authorities and the time that his confrontation took place. They did explain that George Zimmerman's theory about Trayvon circling his car was physically impossible based on what he also said Trayvon was coming from.
Right.
They even spoke about Rachel, that although she may not be sophisticated or educated or even American, does it make what she heard and experienced any less credible?
Right.
But I believe one of the biggest things that I found to be powerful was he asked them to turn it around and picture that it was Trayvon sitting at the defendant's table and it was George Zimmerman that was walking the streets and with the hoodie and the drink and the Skittles. Would they be sitting there having this whole circus? What would they come back with? What would they consider it? I thought that was pretty powerful.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to ask you this. Let's put all of this into perspective. And Elaine, after Deacon Williams, I want you to answer from your point of view. These are six women on a jury in a case where an adult followed a child and killed the child. This is six women that have been away and secluded and sequestered away from their families, their children, their husbands for months on end. April just started, I believe. It's now July. They can't even pick up a phone and call in and say, how are the kids? Because that might be considered, you know, illegal activity.
Right.
So they've done all this. They've heard what they heard. Half of them, regardless of the flips and the circus acts and the trapeze artists, they still are hearing this is a kid of 17. Do you believe with the powerful delivery today, with the flawless tying up of all the lies and the inconsistency, and coupling that with what I just mentioned about all the time away these women have had, do you believe that this delivery was effective enough to get them to refocus on the direction that the evidence has been taken from day one and come back with the verdict that we believe we should get? And I'll ask you that.
I think so. I believe they will come back with a guilty verdict. And I really believe with my whole heart that it's going to come back a guilty verdict for murder and not manslaughter. I really believe that. Because you said out of the six women, all of those women have children. And you have a younger group and you have an older group. Now, the older group would look at things a little different. But the younger group, they're not going to have that because they're thinking about their children themselves. So I think they're going to come back with a guilty verdict for murder.
And Elaine?
I agree too. I mean, this girl used him as an example, as well as George Timberland has used Kayvon as an example, you know? I mean, they're going to use him as an example. So, yes, he will be given the guilty plea right there. He will be put down guilty, and he will be serving his time. And, I mean, like I said earlier, it's basically women there. So these women, if they have children, they know how it feels. You know, if they haven't seen their family since April, you know, they are, you know, a lot more closer to the kids at this moment from this trial alone than they were before. They could have been as close as, you know, as butter on pancakes, but still, they're even closer now to their children. If they've seen their child as, wait a minute, if that happened to my kids, how would I feel? What would happen to, how, you know, how would I take this? So, yes,
right.
I feel that he will be put down as guilty.
Okay, so now let me ask you this, because this is a flip side scenario. Now, Deacon Williams, you said you watched the delivery, so obviously you saw it, you know, straight through. Elaine sort of got third party feedback from people who saw it, I guess, because you're at work, right?
Right.
So let me ask you this. Let me get your opinion on this. We saw exactly what we saw. We saw that the evidence from day one, no matter how many spins and recounts and, like I said, the trapeze artist, tightrope, crazy man, you know, circus shenanigans that the defense tried to throw in there to tweak the evidence to make it still be a possibility in Zimmerman's favor. But whatever failures happened during the prosecution's direct examination, they tied it up well today. So there's no way, I don't care what views you have about anyone, that if you were looking purely at evidence and not at race and not at hatred for the lawyer and not at, you know, the fact that George Zimmerman is sitting up there looking like a heartless caveman, okay, there is no way that based on what you heard, if you had a fully open mind, you could come back with anything but a guilty verdict. Now, let's say that after everything you heard today, that they come back with something that's not guilty. Would you say, I brought that up because it is a follow-up question, would we then, to those of you that don't like to hear the race conspiracy, would you then say that it's a huge, huge supporting factor of the fact that racism is definitely a leading factor in this case? Would you say that? And Deacon Williams, let's take off, like we said, let's not speak on race in what we have in front of us.
Speaking strictly on evidence. Let's see. I feel as though that based on the evidence from both sides, I think the the defense really doesn't have a leg to stand on. Even I noticed when they were using all the props that they used, the cardboard figures, and then they brought up a chart. I felt that was laughable. You know, like they were putting on a sideshow or something. Like they were trying to perform for the jury, and the jury is not going to accept that. I don't believe they're taking that's almost like a slap in their face. Like, you really think that we're that non-intelligent that you need props to convince us of this case? You know, because I don't think that's going to work. I think the defense didn't have a leg to stand on today.
Okay, so posing the question back to you: if mm-hmm. everything you saw from start
yeah.
to finish. Did this jury come back with what we know is should not be a not guilty or one of the least of the lesser charges? If you were never a person that would consider race in this, if you came in, would you believe that verdict was based on something racial?
Yes, I would believe that. It would have to be obvious. I mean, because look at all the evidence. How could that not be? There's no way that. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Okay, and then it's just obvious that race would have a play in this because, I mean, come on, you gotta get real. You can't be for real that you would think that race wouldn't have something to do with this. That would be obvious.
Okay, and I pose the same question to you, Lady Diamond.
Well, before the, if I was in the jury and I'm seeing it this way, I wouldn't even look at it as a race. I wouldn't even pull out the race card at all. I was just, I'm going in blind. I already heard about what happened. I'm going in blind, trying to see how this whole thing goes, and the lack of evidence that their opening argument wasn't as strong. They should have been a lot stronger. They should have been pushing it. They should have, at least pulled me, like me reading a book, and that book has to pull me into its feet, and they weren't
right.
feeding into it. They weren't pulling them in. Compared to now, the abundant amount of evidence that they have right now, it shows that their closing argument should pull the jury. Even though they should have had they should have had a stronger, opening speech than what they do at a closing speech, The closing speech, it was perfect. It was straight to the point. And yes, they have evidence right there. Pulling out the race card, yes, I feel it has a lot to do with race. They used that little boy as an example. He complains many times, there's a black person going around my neighborhood with a hoodie on. What is this? Oh my goodness, I'm remarkably a little boy shows up with a hoodie on of color, walking just to the store, and then we're trying to go back to his grandmother's house, and then kills them. Using him as an example. So, yes, I feel it was a race card. At the end of the day, yes, it was race.
And so I'm asking you that if the jury comes back after all the evidence we've already heard, after the powerful
yes.
delivery, whatever flaws took place during the prosecution itself of the case, the closing arguments tied up everything, cleaned up everything, and made the evidence come back into the true light that it was in before the distraction. So I'm going to ask you that based on what we saw today, it looks like it's a dead to life, guilty for murder verdict. But if they come back with either not guilty or if they come back with a guilty but of a very lesser charge, would you now feel, even if you never thought race card before, would you feel that verdict was based on racism?
Yes.
Yes,
okay.
No doubt.
Yes.
No doubt.
And I'm posing that to the two of you because my listeners that are out there, I know a lot of you, and I do thank you for this. A lot of you have not really agreed with it being a race card. Not that that's my direct viewpoint, even though I think it is obviously that it is. But a lot of you are still hanging here listening in because you're trying to get an understanding of what we're seeing. It's not about everything being a race conspiracy because that's not the way I operate either. But in this case, there is no redeeming quality to bring George Zimmerman's attitude about the situation. There's no buffering of anything. There's no debating. There's nothing you could debate about George Zimmerman away from that he has a hatred for blacks, and blacks in particular. Because once a month, if you heard the tapes and the evidence, once a month this man calls using that there was a string of robberies recently in my neighborhood. Once a month now, there's a suspicious person hanging around the back gate, because he always used that. Okay? And this person looks suspicious, and it's a black kid. It's a black kid. It's a black person. Yeah, they're black. They're black. Then these effing a-holes always get away. They always run quick. Oh, by the way, they're also in that neighborhood, that next town over, which I believe, if you looked up, was a predominantly black neighborhood. So for months on end, this man has been having suspicious ideas about blacks in his neighborhood. He never said exactly what they were doing. People, when the authorities responded, only one out of eight calls that he'd made actually proved to be a little something that was a burglary. But every month he's calling the non-emergency line, not sounding scared or suspicious at all, just happening to notice that there's a black person in his gated community. And he never said, I see a Latino, or I see a white person. He never said that I see a Asian person, or I don't know what that person is, but based on what I see, he's 5'2" or he's 5'7". He never went with that. He immediately said black, and he never said any other description. He never even said what the persons were wearing. I never heard him say anything other than suspicious person and black.
Yeah. Yep.
And this is
yeah.
for my people that are out there that really are disturbed by this being a race issue, because you guys are decent enough to love people as they are and couldn't possibly fathom such a tragic event happening simply because somebody didn't like a skin color. But I'm sorry to let you all know that this is the world that we live in.
Yeah, it's sad.
This is the world that we live in. It is sad, Deacon. It is sad beyond sadness.
And yeah, unfortunately, this is the world that we live in. I mean, it goes all the way back in time from when the slaves came through. It still came all the way to now. Even though we're not slaves no more or anything like that, still it comes all the way through to this day. Racism is still out there. It's still strong. I can't say it's getting any weaker. And it's there. It's still there. No matter how much we try to avoid it, no matter how much we try to erase it, no matter how much we try to move forward, it's still there. It's still breathing in front of us. It's still there. And we have to open our eyes and realize, okay, it's out there. We have to do something about it to stop it. And so far, we can't do much to stop it. We can't change how people think.
We can't. The only thing we could do is not give in to previous assumptions, is not give in to this overall, we don't know you, but we're going to stereotype you. And I've been, once again, my co-host, please, teens, we don't want you out there thinking that the way to show your colors or to puff up your chest or show some justice to Trayvon and his family is to go out there and beat some heads in. Because even Trayvon's mom, who deserves the right to be angry, who deserves the right to want to go and just bash this man's head in, I haven't sat repeatedly for months listening to endless different recordings and different recounts and continuous gunshots going off after our son is screaming on recording. Even going through all that, they don't want you to go out there using it as a racial thing. Even though they know it, they don't want you using riots, for race. Because all that these people are doing is saying, look at these stupid idiots going out there, they're going to riot in their own neighborhood. What are we here trying to stop them for? Let them destroy themselves. Take that anger
yeah.
to the Congress. Take that anger
yeah.
to your local elected officials. Get
yeah.
the churches back involved. You're right, Deacon. Get the churches involved. Come to them community meetings that you have. Go to
yeah.
your district leaders. It may take a while, but at least it will happen. Change,
yeah, you got that right.
Slow
yeah.
Indeed. You were saying, Deacon, I'm sorry.
Yeah, like I've always said, you know, nothing beats a failure but a try. So if we sit back and don't try something, it's just going to get worse and worse.
And I will go back to what you consistently say at all times. There's two things you say. First one and most important is we have to reconnect with our book of instructions.
That's right.
We have to remember that the vengeance belongs to God. We have to remember that without Him, nothing's possible. And with Him, everything is. And the
right.
second thing is, we as the older generation, who's kind of walked the path before these younger people, have to step in and look straight at them and try to reach out and do something.
Right.
You know, we're not gonna, if we walk up to five people a day, we're not gonna to turn all five. But if we can
right.
get one out of that group, we've made a difference.
Correct.
But this verdict, I'm believing that with the way the prosecution came forward and cleaned up their act, and like I said, actually prosecuted the case in their closing argument, I believe that there's no way in any universe that this jury would not see it, the evidence as it's been presented all along, to be anything but what it is. A well-planned
yeah.
murder that took place from previous hatred after a child
yeah.
that posed no danger whatsoever. But we can safely say that with everything being as black and white as it is, if this jury comes back with anything less than guilty for murder, or if they come back with not guilty, okay, we can truly say, we could say it out loud, that racism is a factor. For those people
yeah.
that keep trying to keep it on the politically correct list. And it's sad because this shouldn't be about race. It should be about the fact that this kid was a human being and he deserved at least for the so-called neighborhood watch captain, if he did have all this whatever, to at least walk up and identify himself to Trayvon and see where it went from there.
That's right.
Not that I think it would have made any darn difference, because this man had a mission. But
yeah,
he didn't even
most
have
definitely.
To walk up to this person and do his job. And you were saying, Deacon, I'm sorry.
Yeah, there's no other way to think that, because he had his mind made up what he was going to do to that young man. He's already said that that these people are always getting away. So he made up in his mind, he says, there's no way I'm letting this guy get away. He's wrong on all fronts. First of all, he should have never left his car like they instructed him to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he's not a police officer. So he was out of bounds, period.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I can't understand why you're on a block watch group, and even if you're licensed to have a gun, why would you have it? It doesn't make any sense. Come on. Come on, you feeling that threatened? It doesn't make sense.
The prosecution put up a very good point. If he was trying to go out there and make everybody believe that he was so deathly terrified of this skinny little boy, okay, why after he had the gun would he put it back in his pocket? Why wasn't his speech slurred after being consistently banged on the concrete and
yeah.
consistently killed? Because according to him, and one of the other things that I really wanted to kiss his prosecutor for, was he pointed out something that nobody said throughout the entire prosecution, that each and every time George Zimmerman told this story, he added details to back up the suitcase.
Right.
To make the situation even more heightened, more heightened and more intense and more scary. It was starting to sound like a script from a horror movie.
Yeah. You know, I would like to make a point on,
uh-huh.
there was a point in the evidence presentation when he brought out the concrete.
Right.
I had witnessed a person getting his head bashed on the sidewalk where somebody was
right.
on top of him and they kept taking a slam in their head against the sidewalk.
Mm-hmm.
I've witnessed the damage that can do. And what they showed from Zimmerman, the back of his head, there's no way that he could say that Trayvon bashed his head on the sidewalk and that's the only little damage that he had. Come on.
a 0.5 centimeter laceration, which is a fancy medical word for cut, people, that look like they took a nail clipper, you know those little portable nail clippers with a little file in it that you flip out of the side and you
stick it.
I've done that to myself when I was trying to convince my parents that I just got into some bodily harm because I knew I was supposed to be, I wasn't supposed to be someplace. Because I don't really want to cut myself, so I'm just going to make it look scary. Okay? Oh, come on. I've seen my kids do stuff like that.
Yeah.
Give me a break.
And I think
those
I believe that if they investigated even deeper, I think this thing goes a lot deeper, too. And as far as those wounds to the back of his head, I think they might have been inflicted by some of the police that were trying to cover up for him.
I believe that, too.
Yeah.
No crime scene I've ever seen has had such a gap between fresh pictures and when they took... Oh, well, that's the one good thing the prosecutor brought up today, too. Okay. They took pictures of Floyd Zimmerman at the crime scene. His nose was not out of whack. And like I said again, according to George Zimmerman's own mouth, we were fighting in the rain, on the grass, in the mud. It was pouring down raining at this time. We were in grass. We were on the cement. We were in the grass. We were on the cement. I was getting pummeled, and my head was getting pounded. My head was getting pounded. He punched me in the nose several times. He bashed my head several times. In the rain, in the mud, in the grass.
Mm-hmm.
In the rain, in the mud, in the grass. Yet my red suit was not with sand or dust or even a hedge leaf or grass stain or mud stain or wet stain. Or a blood stain. Did I miss something? I missed something, right?
No, I think you covered all the bases.
You covered it all. Okay.
All right. Okay. Okay. So now let's talk about the back of his head. The lumps I saw in his head look like it's genetic and not inflicted. I don't know about you, but it looks like he was born with it. Okay. All I did see was that his shoes happened to have two very, very precisely shaped, round, wet marks that were consistent with his very, very, very hefty behind sitting on this little boy, and the tops of the soles of his shoes was on the ground. So with that being said, oh, by the way, I think there were grass stains on the knees. So let's see. But I'm a mom of many children that have seen many of things, and I could tell you when they're playing and they're rolling in the mud, in the rain, in the grass, in the cement, in the blood, okay, you don't come back with a clean jogging suit.
Nope.
You don't come back with no dust. You don't come back looking like your face has been nicely swiped away and cleanly shaven.
Especially if he was pounded the way he said he was. He should have had black eyes, bruises, badly bruised face, if he was being pounded the way he said he was.
And he won't be walking straight either.
What about Trayvon having no swollen knuckles, no DNA, no blood? He was pounding this man's bone repeatedly, according to this man. He was really coming at me. He really was. And then I went over there like that, you know. Deacon, I'm going to go to you because I don't think the rest of these panelists can remember this Richard Pryor thing. But do you remember in one of Richard Pryor's stand-ups, he was talking about how kids lie?
He said
it goes from one question and you done heard about 80 different things that the kids said leading up to the answer. And so he was like, I'm going to tell you, okay? First, I was running, right? But I wasn't really running, real running. I was just moving my feet like that. And then by the time that he went through the 15 different walks of life, he goes, okay. And then Richard said, well, if you're going to tell it like that after all that, forget it then. You know? But that's what what happened was, right, well, Trayvon came at me, right? Well, he was in the bushes, then he was between the houses. No, then he just came at me, but then I went at him. Wait a minute. Did I say that already? Okay, wait a minute. Oh, then we were in the grass, right? And he really was pummeling me, like, really hard. He never once said I couldn't see for a minute. There was blood in my eyes.
Right.
Nothing. I mean, I guess that by the time he told so many lies, he started going, did I miss something? Oh, wait a minute.
Never, not one point did he ever say he was dazed or anything.
Right. And he stood for hours after in the arrest telling different versions of different people, drinking water. When you get a head injury. Now, I was a dancer, and I went and did a little spin and slipped on a wet spot that was on the dance floor, and I hit my head just on the hard auditorium stage. And I didn't get no bash marks, but I was dazed as hell for about 15 minutes. This guy had no nausea, no blind vision, no blurred speech, no staggering, no walking, no shaking, no tremors.
No signs of concussion or anything. Yeah.
Not a thing. Not a thing. Okay? But he got pummeled from the front and the back. And after all of that, he still was skilled enough in dexterity to make a precision point-based gunshot wound to the boy's chest. Things that make you go,
Yeah.
All right, guys.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but before we go into over segment, Monster Miles is in the waiting here. I want to thank every one of you who hung out with me on this important topic. The sports segment is up next, and I'll be back with closing arguments. You heard me, closing arguments. So I said I'll be back with my closing remarks. But let's go get Miles up here right after the short break, okay? Guys, thank you, Lady Olympia. Thank you. For all my listeners that are out there, thank you very much. God bless you. But we will be back after the sports segment to have our final remarks.
Bless you all,
okay? Thank you very much, sir. Marvin Gaye, what's going on? Definitely appropriate in this situation. I'll be back in 2 and a half.
Hey, what's up, man? Hey, how you doing?
Mother, there's too many of you crying. Brother, there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Father, we don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer, for only love can conquer hate. You know we've got to find a way to bring some love and kiss here today. Oh, take it light. It's fine. Don't punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see. Oh, what's going on? What's going on? Yeah, what's going on? Oh, what's going on?
Right now.
You're listening to On the Edge.
Yo, what's good, folks? You know who this is. Your boy, Monster Miles. We're going to do these lovely sports after talking about something very serious. Now it's time to have some fun. Get the seriousness out the way. Now it's time for some trash talk. You know how I do it. We keep it a buck about the bum heat, all of these boring sports people out here right now, all these fake Heat fans, all your fake Knicks fans, it's all good. But Summer League right now, we got, of course, New York beat New Orleans. I don't even know why New Orleans has a Summer League. They just need to go sit down, go relax for the next season. Go, y'all need help, y'all need Jesus, y'all need something. Don't go against New York. Y'all know what's going to happen. Do not sleep on New York. Anyway, let's talk about my favorite sport, football. Victor Cruz finally came back with his $43 million contract, guaranteed $15 million. Man, I wish I had that type of money right now. I wouldn't be here. No, I'm joking. Oh, sorry. Hold on a second, folks. We got a caller.
Call you on the air?
Yes. Hello?
Yeah, hello?
Hey, what's up, man? How y'all doing?
Doing good. And you?
I'm all right. I'm going good.
That's good.
So, what topic we on right now?
We doing sports right now.
Okay, what you talking about? Who you going for?
I was just thinking about Victor Cruz coming back to the Giants for 5 years for $43 million.
Oh, that's a good sign for you guys, man. That's a good sign for you. Now if you guys can solve what's happening in the backfield, then maybe you can win some games this year.
Nah, they need to get rid of Corey Webster. He's kind of bad right now. Hopefully this season he'll show up.
You better hope Eli Manning show up this year. Because I don't know who that was last year.
That was quarterback's favorite spot to go to last year. But hold on, Cole. We have another caller who's about to join in. Hello, Carl. You on the air?
What's up?
Yo, how's it going, man?
How y'all doing, man? Y'all ready to put some football or what?
Oh, man, I'm fast ready, man.
Yeah.
This is the dead season of sports for me. Ain't no basketball, ain't no football.
Oh, yeah. Y'all get ready because we on grown folks radio now.
That's what's up.
Yeah.
I was just telling him, brother, that they better hope Eli show up this year. Cause he was playing like Eli last year.
I don't know what you're talking about.
They won't have no problems as long as he's on his medication.
Okay, that's what it was. Because
yeah.
He must have ran out last year. He kept throwing the ball to the other team. I didn't know what was happening with him, man.
Why people hate him like Eli? Well, that's my homie.
I like Eli, man. Don't get me wrong, but he's just not there all the time. Can you give me that?
Yeah.
I'll give you that. He comes back.
at it. First half, he's not there. I'm not going to lie. But the second half, he usually comes back hard.
Right, right.
Well, let's see. He's still the number one quarterback as far as fourth quarter comebacks.
Right, right.
Yeah, so I got to give him that.
It's just the first three quarters be horrible.
Yeah.
Got to show it out.
All right, Mr. Williams.
Yeah.
Mr. Williams, I hear you talk about Mr. Eli Manning? did I hear you talk about Eli Manning?
Yes, I did.
Hey, Bob.
Oh, you will not, sir. Okay.
Uh-oh.
Let's not talk about your little Philadelphia Steelers. Okay. No,
Philadelphia Steelers. I don't know any Philadelphia Steelers.
Exactly. That's exactly where they're going to be in sports world this year.
So
they don't
the
even
Giants
know
or Eli cannot count to six.
Hello. I called them Philly Steelers because they're not going to know where they are this year. Okay.
Okay.
I know they're from Pittsburgh, but they're going to be lost on the field.
Okay.
And they will not count to six unless they count in how many figures they're going to lose at the end of the year.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, we'll see.
You talk about my Eli. You do
we
not talk about New
see.
York, bro. We do not talk
I'm
about
not talking
New York.
I'm talking about New York. I'm talking about Eli. He is not a New Yorker.
He is not from New York.
He's from one of them towns where he throws bales of hay.
Oh, okay. Okay.
He is not a New Yorker, so don't claim farmers. I'm a New Yorker.
Let him hate.
Okay. If I see you at Madison Square Garden, I'm not gonna allow you in the Knicks game. All right.
Hey, why would he be in Madison Square Garden? Ain't no basketball played there.
Oh, no. Back off. I'm talking to Mr. Zeddy. He likes talking to Mr. Williams. I'm talking to Mr. Williams over there. He likes talking about my Giants. Shame on you.
Wait a minute. I don't speak Swahili. I speak plain English. I didn't say anything about the Giants. I said Eli Manning.
He wants to talk about Eli. So what happened with his quarterback? Didn't he get a pizza, right?
What was that?
Yeah.
Oh, he's an old timer, so he was filling his oats at the cost of the NFL? I think not. Whoops. Won't be counting the six this time, except how many years he'll be in jail.
Hey, who's going to be in jail?
Your quarterback, come on now. We know he has been in trouble with the law so many times.
I can't hear too many cooks in the kitchen.
Go on. Go ahead.
No, but I didn't hear that.
I can't say what now?
I'm just trying to ask Eli in trouble.
Eli?
He was in trouble all last year throwing interceptions.
Y'all can't hate on Eli all y'all want, but you gotta understand, we got to go right back with our defense. Y'all got to hurt him this year. Don't hate on them. Y'all trying to hate on them. Oh my God.
Why in the world would you let your leader of your defense get away?
Well, why would you?
OC was not the leader.
Hey.
Justin Tucker, this is straight.
He was one of your defensive leaders.
All you guys had was a pass rush. All you guys had was
quarterback rape.
What?
Repeat the question, Miles. Go ahead, dear. Why would Pittsburgh let their quarterback rape?
Oh. Damn.
Why would you
let your mess? Why y'all don't let... In other words, you say, why would your quarterback get in trouble with the law?
I can't understand y'all. I'm hearing too many voices at one time. What's up? Come again.
He was asking, why would you let your quarterback rape another girl then if you're talking about our defense letting a good player go?
You know what? That's weak. That's weak as hell. The man was never found guilty of anything.
Not if they want to count to seven.
That's when they ain't got
nothing to say. The man was never found guilty of anything.
Not if they want to count to seven. He wouldn't even be running that route. If they want to count to seven.
No. Don't get it twisted now. Let's get it right. Let's speak on that now. Was he convicted of anything?
Apparently,
answer the question.
He forgot outside of the field he's supposed to be running it.
Answer the question.
Is his court case over yet?
What was the question? Was he found guilty of anything?
He should have been.
If I could have, would have, should have, don't count. And it smells like, you know what?
Hey,
no clue.
Hey, Deacon, they just ain't got nothing good to say, man, about their team, so they want to rag on your team.
I know, I'm not saying anything about it.
Let's talk about the Giants secondary or lack thereof.
Y'all
had was a pass rush, and y'all let y'all best pass rusher get away. Who y'all getting?
Okay, like I said, we were not good with that last year because of the fact Corey Webster did not show up.
I tell y'all what. Since y'all overpaid Victor Cruz, play him at the as a slot back.
Play who as a slot back?
Play Victor Cruz in the secondary since they overpaid for him.
Oh, if they do that, he'll get broke up.
I mean, they ain't got nobody else back there. Who else they got back there? You can't name one of them, can you? You a guy in the
game,
can you name who the safeties are? Who are the safeties?
All right, y'all are sleeping with David Wilson right now. How many kickers did he have last year?
Hey, Miles.
Yeah, Miles.
Who's going to carry the ball?
The bread, man.
Is that silence I hear?
Yeah, that's crickets you hear.
Now,
these are Giants fans I'm talking to, right? Who's carrying the ball?
I'm a Giants fan until I die. I was born a Giants fan.
Okay, but answer my question.
Who's carrying the ball?
Simple question.
All right.
Who's on first? What's on second? And first on.
And nobody carrying the ball.
That's very wrong.
Listen, you got to understand, though. Our offense is on point this year. We got Hakeem Nicks.
Don't avoid the question, Miles. You my dude, man.
Right.
Come on now.
Hold on, Jeremy. Let the Deacon say what he got to say.
I'm getting sick of this now. Y'all trying to...
I love you to death. You're my boy. You're my boy, Miles. Just ask my little question, please. Who's carrying the ball?
Echo.
Silence is golden.
I said there was an echo, so repeat your question.
He said he's carrying the ball.
Oh, they can't hear you now.
Okay.
It's static now.
Eli, Cruz, Wilson, those are the three that's going to be out there. You go ahead and tell them what I said so we can stop echoing over the side. Now say that again. Who will be carrying the ball?
Who is carrying the ball for the Giants?
Hey, they had to Google it.
Y'all talking about the Giants.
Yo,
who
is your team? I mean, he's been asking the question for 10 minutes now.
Who's your team?
Did y'all get it off of Google yet?
They got it. They didn't get the roster.
Okay, got it now.
We're looking for Terrence.
What's his name? Who's your team, Terrence?
I don't have a team anymore. I was a 70 Steelers, baby, and I just like football now.
You're the alumni. You're not even a fan.
If you force me to pick a team, I will have to pick the Steelers. I was with the Steelers with the Terry Bradshaw era. So if you force me to pick one team, I will have to pick the Steelers. But
I don't root for any team. I just love football.
And I've been a Steelers fan since Joe Gillum.
I've been a Steelers fan since 71, bro. I love them back then.
Yeah.
I like
you know, their first championship, you know who got them there, right? And then they gave it over to Bradshaw.
Oh, yeah.
Joe Gillum got them to their first championship,
Gillum, yeah.
And then he got hurt.
Yeah.
And then they gave his starting spot to Terry Bradshaw.
See,
okay,
that's
can
why
I
was
a
Terry
question?
Bradshaw fan.
May I ask a question, please?
Sure.
Mr. Williams,
yeah.
How long ago
yeah.
was, did they finish counting to six?
It doesn't matter.
How long ago did they finish counting to six?
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
I'll give you this. We will have 8 Super Bowl rings before anybody else gets to 6.
What about that? All that smog in Pittsburgh, I think that's what you're all sitting there waiting on. And you got a supporter over here who's just an alumni. He's not even a fan anymore.
But
well,
you know what? I can stand
he's
on
that.
Can't nobody else stand on 6
you
but
me. Who, 71?
What?
Terrence, you over there with the alumni jacket, right? Steelers, all the way, 71. Woo-hoo, 6.
That's who I like it. That ain't jacket. That's who I like
We woo-hoo, 6. And then what are you? What are you, Deacon? What are you, Deacon? You the coach?
What do you mean, what am I?
No, you're the coach. No, we just established that Terrence is not an active fan. He's an alumni. So what are you? You're the active coach?
I'm an active coach.
You're the active coach, right? Yes, we can still
the
do
coach,
this.
The coach of what?
I'm just an avid Steelers fan.
That's what I am.
Okay.
I'm an avid Steelers fan.
Did they ever answer the question?
Did they ever answer the question?
No.
Okay. What, 10 minutes now?
It's
been over 10 minutes.
You guys ain't Google the roster yet?
Okay. I'll tell you right now, Eli's gonna lead, Cruz is gonna carry, and Wilson will back it up. Anything else?
Hey, who
running
the ball
around anywhere? Where you at?
You
lost in the
sauce? Maybe y'all should stop sniffing all that smog from Pittsburgh. Stop it. Smog.
Hey, who is this with the Monster Miles show?
Smog.
I thought it was the Monster Miles show.
That's okay. I'm going to step back. You don't be talking about New York. Don't be talking about New York. All you mama smokers.
Wait. Deacon, Katie was back there eating a sandwich, man. She heard you talking about her daughter. She had to jump in on that one. I said you was in the back.
I said you was in the back
eating a sandwich, Katie. And you have to jump in when he says something about the Giants. Wait a minute, let's talk about the Giants.
At least I got an active team that I'm an active fan for. Don't even try it. You still don't remember the good old days. You remember the good old days. And you're the alumni. You're the non-active fan. And
If you're such a fan, who's running the ball this year?
I just answered you. All that smog then got in your ears.
There's so many people talking.
I didn't even catch that. Who is carrying the ball now?
All people with smog in their nostrils. Let's stand back and get out of the industrial dangers for a minute.
Excuse me.
Okay.
All I heard was Big Cruz. That's all I heard.
Right, because you were busy talking with the other one. So hold on. I said Eli's going to lead it. Victor Cruz will have his back, and David Wilson will back him up. Anything else?
Then what is David
Wilson?
Who is David Wilson?
Oh, yeah.
He's like an actor, don't he? Didn't he act in Good Times or something?
You can't hear Pittsburgh. You can't hear Pittsburgh people because all that smog is in their speech.
I'm trying to understand something, but I got all these voices. I want to ask a question.
All right.
Okay, I couldn't hear. Who is this Wilson?
David Wilson is the number one pick last year from Virginia Tech.
From Virginia Tech.
Yep.
He sucked at Virginia Tech, so he wasn't all that great.
Right. Whoa. Time out.
He returned a kick for a 97 yards, scored a touchdown.
Yes,
he was. How many touchdowns? How many touchdowns? So y'all Googled all of that,
all
right?
I'm going to have to mute a mic.
Yeah, they did.
Okay.
The NFL is not college football.
I'm going to love it because these old-timers and their smog-filled life. That's okay. I'm going to love it. And I'm going to call
the NFL
everybody
is not college football.
Hey, hey,
okay,
Deacon, I thought that was
One at a time.
I thought that was Charlie Wilson, brother. That's what I thought it was.
That's
I went on the road with Charlie.
In Pittsburgh.
Who lost to Green Bay in the Super Bowl?
Green Bay.
So is that the only back that they have that's going to handle the ball? That's all I'm asking.
No.
Who's the other back?
I forgot who the other back is right now.
Don't worry about
it. We got this.
Victor Cruz.
We're
going to
get that game.
All you need to know, Deacon, is Victor Cruz. And just leave it alone. He's going to run the ball. He's going to catch the ball.
Victor Cruz. That's
he's doing punt.
That's a bad receiver. I wish he had went to the Steelers.
Oh, loving it, right?
Let's go.
No, he dropped too many balls, Deacon. He dropped too many. He had the second most drops in the league last year. We good.
Oh yeah, we're definitely good.
They just had a whole big playback all by themselves.
Mm-hmm.
It's all that smog. I tell you, smog.
Look. We had the fastest receiver in football, and still could afford to give him up, and we still got top speed in our receiving corps.
Is that your final answer?
And not to mention the number one defense. Can't forget
about
that.
Is that your final answer? I can
replace y'all secondary with high school players and get more production from them.
You remember that?
Who is y'all safety?
You know what I'm hearing? You know what I'm hearing? Boys, you know what I'm hearing over there? Do you remember Deacon back in 71 when he ran across that field? 1979? All that smog from all the little smokestacks coming up here, dude.
I sound like a little jealousy over there in your voice. Did I hear that?
Ain't no jealousy, baby.
There's
a whole bunch of old guys back there talking about the yesteryear, brother. The yesteryear. Can they count to six? Can they count to six?
They can talk about this
year. How many years back?
Let them know. Like, you got to understand, Giants fans are loyal, and we don't have to say let them say whatever.
I'm sorry, was number six after the Green Bay or before? No, but let me ask the coach. Coach.
Yeah.
Coach Williams.
Yeah, what you want?
Was the loss to Green Bay before or after number six?
What?
Oh. What's the get the smog out. The smog.
I can't hardly hear you because I told you all, the man. It's too many
you
voices.
You got an echo, okay? You got an echo.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, are we good now?
Giant Stadium.
Are we good now?
Yeah.
All right. Coach Williams. Come
I keep hearing you say, is it all right? Did I hear, is it all right?
Coach Williams, is that better?
Yeah.
No echo?
Yeah.
No echo?
No
smog
echo.
Clear? All the smog clear? No more factory smokestack problems?
There's no smog here where I'm at, but I know there's plenty
Coach
of smog
Williams.
In New York.
Coach Williams, kindly tell me when was the Green Bay loss? Was it before or after number six?
It was after number six.
Exactly.
That would have been number seven if we had the loss to Green Bay.
Six is your lucky number. Six is your lucky number. It's the last number they learned to count to. Leave it alone.
Okay.
Or are you going back?
Okay, if we don't win another Super Bowl, then you know New York is not going to do anything.
Wait a minute, how many Super Bowls? And that is a true fact.
No.
Wait a minute. How many Super Bowls do the Giants got? I can only remember three.
You can
wait. Did they just say we're not
going
to
go to the Super Bowl again?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
oh,
what
oh,
we said. Yeah, they're
oh,
not going to
number
the Super Bowl.
Oh.
He can only number three. Well, he's an alumni fan. He's not even a fan. He's just the alumni. He's the guy that's in the... You're the guy that's
New York's got three Super Bowls, right?
Hold on.
That's what I'm saying. How many of y'all talking about Pittsburgh Super Bowls? Y'all only got three.
And there's more to come. The Steelers haven't made it out of the playoffs.
Hey, the Steelers held the whole decade down.
You haven't defeated anybody to even get in the running.
You got an echo, baby. I can't understand it.
Yeah, the echo is bad.
That's New York hustle and shuffle. That's the New York
No, it's the smog in your ears from Pittsburgh, freaking Pennsylvania. Hello? Now listen very carefully. Let me try this again, okay?
You,
Terrence, are the old man that don't ever give up. You used to play back in the days, and I remember I'm going to sit in this audience with my jersey from way back in the day. And Coach Williams over here is still talking about, hey, count to six. They haven't made it past the playoffs since number six. And they lost to Green Bay.
Wait a minute. Was you guys even five?
Wait a minute. You're making a big deal out of a loss to Green Bay. Let me
get out of the playoffs for a while now.
You know what?
You won't let me finish nothing.
And you keep cutting me off.
Because they know they got no argument.
Oh, no. My bad. I'm the host.
One of them old cheerleaders who team never won.
You're not even a fan, Terrence.
And now you're not a cheerleader no more.
You're not even a fan.
You're with your cheerleading outfit on. With no
cheers,
I'm
a cheerleader, a diehard fan, a Knicks rooter, a Giants rooter. I'm all that to the day I die.
Hey, what
I'm
is New York?
Okay, diehard fan,
let me ask you a question. When the last time New York had a parade besides the Giants?
Yankees, brother.
The Yankees? What was that, 95?
It was just a few years ago, brother, and I was in college at the
time.
I didn't go to college when I was in my 20s, and I'm not in my 20s now. I was standing right outside of my college when they passed by in their little cars and tickets. So don't even go there. New York is not as far removed as you think. Now, I'm sorry, are you a Detroit fan?
No. But I love Detroit sports. I'm a Michigan man.
I like the Wolverines, baby. Guys, I'm sorry, but we're going to have to cut this short. We're going over our time. You guys are funny. I got to let them outside off, but this is fun. I'll see you Wednesday.
Oh, yeah, please call in. Like, I want to hear your Pittsburgh fans and everything.
since we didn't get a chance to say too much, so, you know, it's okay. We'll get you Wednesday.
We'll continue this on Wednesday. Make sure y'all do your research on your little Steelers.
You better know who your running back and your corners are. So, do your Googling before we hang up.
Hey, or your safety.
Hello?
Don't hate on our quarterback, though. Remember that.
It was?
Eli is better than Big Ben. Pepper.
Eli is partially mentally disabled.
Yeah. And his knees don't work. His athleticism is shot.
Hey, Deacon.
Yeah. Wasn't it New York calling him Sheila? Wasn't it New York calling him Sheila? It wasn't us.
Sure
it was
y'all.
you had a lot of fire. Steelers,
right,
baby.
We're going to do this argument next Wednesday because we're running out of time now.
All right. Steeler Nation for life.
All day.
Nah, it's Giant Nation, homie. It's Giant Nation, homie. Loaded to the strip.
Good night, fellas. Okay.
I enjoyed that. That was fun.
All right. Okay, guys. All right, listeners. That was our little break from our really tough topic tonight. I hope all of you that's listening in for the first time enjoyed it. We go all in with sports. It's all in friendly fun. We have some distractions from the bad realities. So
So in my closing remarks tonight, I want to thank every one of you for coming in. I do want to announce that we are now at 6,774 listeners. You guys have been coming in almost 100 new callers a day, 100 new listeners. It's an honor to us. And we definitely try to give you a little bit of everything. We want to come across as communication gap bridges. We're trying to offer, you know, those of you out there trying to stay above the negativity, some free advertising and free marketing. The showcase that was supposed to happen today will take place all day on tomorrow's special broadcast. It's going to be spread during Saturday. And, you know, you'll just look for the postings and you'll see the times that's coming up. All of my entrepreneurs and my new music artists, you will be showcased tomorrow, my courtesy, because of today's important topic. I haven't preempted your normal slot today. Those of you that have been contributing, thank you very much to the listenership, to the base. Those of you that have been offering your input and calling in as live panelists, thank you for your views and for your connections out there. And as I always say in my closing, be blessed, be a blessing, and please make a difference. Teens, no rioting, okay? See you tomorrow.
On the Edge, real talk about real issues.